Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth, and it's a rainy day in the second half of August. In South Central Alaska, autumn comes early, and that means that the Alaska State Fair is on its way. Of course, we're going to have some Indian summer when the fair gets started. But today, we're going to have a fun discussion about the fair. I'm hoping that we'll get into a lot of topics to talk about the practicalities of going to the fair, what's going to be happening there. Also talk in the second half about giant vegetables, which is probably my favorite topic related to the fair. And we're going to be talking about some new things, some native arts and culture at the fair. And hopefully you'll call in with some memories or thoughts or, you know, what makes the fair so special. It's coming up next week, the Alaska State Fair, and that's our topic today on Hometown Alaska. My in-studio guest is Dean Phipps. He's the director of marketing and all-around man at hand and chief bottle washer out there. Thanks for being with us, Dean.
Thanks, Charles. I'm happy to be here.
It's the 75th anniversary for the Alaska State Fair. And if you think about it, in this young state, there's very few things that have been around for 75 years, especially institutions that have just seemed like they grow and grow and grow. What's the history of the fair? How did this particular fair become such a big part of our life here?
Well, you've probably heard a lot about the colonists settling in the Matanuska Valley, and the first fair was in 1936, and it originated in downtown Palmer. And the colonists, shortly after they lived through the first part and kind of got up and running, one of the first things they did is they wanted to have a fair. And so that grew as a way that they could get together and share the things that they had developed there and the camaraderie. And it's just continued like that. And someone had the foresight at some point to, in the 50s, I believe, to purchase the 220 acres just outside of Palmer, which has now become 300 acres. And that allowed us to really grow into the fair that we are now.
It's been there as long as I can remember, since I was a kid, hasn't it? It's been
quite a while. Yeah, I think the first one, I went to the first one in downtown Palmer shortly after I came to Alaska. But yes, 75 years. And, I haven't been there since the beginning, but I have worked there quite a while. And the changes that have taken place are really interesting. One of the longtime managers of the Minnesota State Fair said that a fair is a mirror of the community from which it comes. And we certainly are that. If you want to get a microcosm of Alaska from all over the state, you can find it at the fair, whether it's crafts, performers. We have a commitment to a lot of local performers at our fair. And that's kind of juxtaposed against the concert lineup that we have now, which is getting better and better and better every year. So
yeah, amazing. Well, you were saying that some fairs in other parts of the country are having trouble, and I suppose that probably has something to do with the economy, and I don't know if with changing entertainment patterns or whatever, but it seems like our fair is bigger all the time. I mean, it seems to be thriving.
There's a couple fairs that have ceased to exist. I think fairs that have received state funding for operational funds is kind of going by the wayside with a lot of other cuts. We've always been pretty self-sufficient. There's been some key board members and people over the years that thought we ought to pay as we go. And if we had a bad year, we cut back and lived within our means. And so that commitment has really allowed us to, that and a few sunny days has allowed us to do that. Yes.
Yeah, we should talk about the weather. And I should mention that the Alaska State Fair is a nonprofit client of KSKA. So just to have that disclosure out there that that relationship exists, and the fair is a nonprofit corporation. You have to break even so you stay in business, but you're not out to make money.
Exactly, and we're a 501c3, so we're a true nonprofit. We also are like a small city in the sense that we never can get ahead of the services that people want us to have, whether that's electronics, whether that's, you know, putting a new roof on a building. Right now, as I left this morning, they were putting a new roof on the event center. There's always things. We're like a small city. We grow from a little sleepy area, 300 acres, and become a city of 45,000 overnight.
Wow. 45,000 is, what does that number represent?
That number probably represents 45 to 48,000 people that might be on a busy, sunny weekend day
On a single day?
On a single day.
Wow, you think about the population of our area. If you have, you've got like a fifth of them there.
and you know, some of them come back, and our overall attendance generally hovers around 300,000. Mm-hmm. Some of them are repeat attendees, but people are really committed to the fair. They let us know if we're kind of getting off track. You know, mm-hmm. they consider it a vital part of the community.
Yeah.
You know, we've just become more and more involved in the City of Palmer Parade this year. You know, as things change, you know, well, we were involved with the parade only in name only. And this year, now we have a lot of performers that are going to be in the parade, and we're working together. It's probably going to be a better parade than it ever has been. And that came out of, like, maybe there wasn't going to be a parade. So, you know, we have to work with people on a lot of different levels and try to find that.
Yeah.
Right.
So the fair is running the 25th of August through September 5th. That's a long time. Some of those times will be light, some will be ultra heavy. As a person who doesn't particularly like crowds, what is the secret to getting out there without getting stuck in a horrendous traffic jam and enjoying it, you know, without feeling like you're crushed? I mean, other than going on during a rainstorm or something.
You know, I've been through it all, and I'd have to say that we do a lot better job of getting people into the grounds. We do have a two-lane, the four-lane becomes two lanes, mm-hmm. so there's only right. so many people that can go through there. But we have certified flaggers. We have a lot better system of getting people in. Mm-hmm. So if you want to avoid that, leave early. Everyone wakes up on a Sunday morning on a Saturday or Sunday, right. they have breakfast and then they all leave at once for the fair.
Right. So what time does the fair open in the morning?
On weekdays, it opens at 10 o'clock and then it goes till 10 p.m. And mm-hmm. It opens at noon and goes to 10 p.m. On weekends, and on Friday is a weekend day now, it opens at 10 and goes to 10.
Okay, so if you show up there at opening time, you're going to have the place relatively to yourself for a while.
Come early. And mm-hmm. the folks who live in the valley like to come on weekdays. That's another tip. And there are several opportunities to save money, or you know, if there's a particular thing happening on the day that you want to be there. They like to come on weekdays, and they come more often. So,
well, this is a call-in show. I've kind of been monopolizing my guest here because I have a lot of questions queued up in my mind. He's Dean Phipps, who is the head of marketing for the Alaska State Fair. If you want to get on the air with us, the phone number in Anchorage is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, it's toll-free, 888-353-5752. And we love getting emails, hometown@alaskapublic.org. Website has some resources where you can learn more and comment and so forth, alaskapublic.org. And now I would like to go to a caller, Ruth, who had a question about taking the train out to the fair. Ruth?
Hi. I'm actually calling from the Alaska Railroad.
Oh, excellent. Okay, good.
About the Alaska Railroad fair trains that we're offering for the fair.
Tell us about it. Yeah.
Okay. We have actually six trains four trains that operate on both weekends of the fair. The Friday the 26th will be the first train that departs out of Anchorage. It leaves at 1:30 and arrives into Palmer at 3 o'clock. And we do have fares for just the train or the train plus fare admission as well.
What is the fare? How much does it cost to do that?
I knew you were going to ask me that. Now I have to pull it up because I don't have it off the top of my head.
All right.
So just a second while we're talking about it, I'll find it for you. Folks can go to our website, alaskarailroad.com, and if they go under our specials tab and then under special event trains, there's the information there.
Okay.
As well. But with fare admission, an adult is $54, and that is a round trip fare on the railroad plus the fare admission. The rail only is $45 for an adult. We do have a child rate, which is 6 to 12 years old, and that's $27 with fare admission, $22 without. A toddler rate, which is ages 2 to 5, $22 with fare admission, and it's the same without.
Sounds like a great idea. You know, my daughter, who is 10 years old, was saying the other night, I've never been on a train when it was actually going. That would probably be the highlight of her day.
Yeah, there you go. Well, as we like to say, because you can't eat cotton candy and drive at the same time.
That's right. Why stress? Yeah, get on the rails.
And it goes right to the fairgrounds, so it's a nice, convenient way to get there.
And they do blow the whistle when it's time to leave.
Oh, yeah, good idea. Don't miss the train. You'd really be stuck.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay, great. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah, so thanks for having us on.
You bet.
Okay.
And now we've got another guest to join us. Susie Crosby is working on entertainment and events for the fair. And there's a new program starting this year to include more about Alaska Native arts and culture. And so I want to talk to Susie about both the headline entertainment and also some of the work that's gone into including more Alaska Native content at the fair. Susie, thanks for being with us.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
So tell us about this new program you're doing, and what is it called, and what does it involve? Who are you adding to the fair this year?
Well, the long title is Raven's People, Celebrating Alaska's Native Cultures. And thanks to a state grant that we put in for, and we spent our whole winter on tenterhooks to see whether we would get it or not, we did get it. We're able to bring in pushing 100 different artists and performers from rural Alaska, focusing specifically on Native Alaska culture. So we're trying to be very all-inclusive, bringing people in from Southeast, from out in Bethel, from up Nome and Barrow, and every variety of artist and artisan and performer. We've got a blues rock band out of Fairbanks that has never been to the fair before. So some of the people are on the road system. The majority are flying in. We've got a Yupik acoustic rock band from Bethel who's never been to the fair before.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, the name of that band is Frozen Whitefish, and they were featured, that music was featured on the Flying Wild Alaska cable program.
And I guess the schedule would all be on the alaskastatefair.org website?
Yeah, and you know, I will tell you, we got the grant late in the game, so we've been slamming it together as fast as we could. Some of the details are still a little sketchy, because we're still adding people as we speak. So you may see things at the fair that you didn't see on the website ahead of time because people are still expressing interest, and we're still even today booking flights for people to come in.
Wow.
So we're so excited about this. We were supposed to know in May, and we finally found out in July. So it's been a very quick trying to do as much as we can in a short period of time.
This was a legislative grant?
Yeah, it was. Okay. It had to go through the House and the Senate, and the governor left it in when he signed off, and that all happened on July 8th. So some of our stuff had already gone to print by that time.
But right. How much money did they give you to work with?
Moving forward with bringing as many people in as possible.
How much money did you have to work with in bringing all this together?
Am I supposed to say that?
From the grant, yeah.
I think it's probably public information. I asked for $75,000, but the guy that went to bat for the grant, he put in for $150,000, and we got it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you see, So the good thing is, if we don't spend it all this year, we get to carry it over for next year. So if some of the things that we were working on this year don't come through, we still can do it for the same purpose again next year.
That's great. You know, and so it's not, as I understand it, it's not all just performances. There will also be art and crafts and that sort of thing, or how did it?
Yeah, there will be. We've got three Athabascan master bead workers who are coming in to spend several days at the fair. I'm going to pull up one other sheet while we're talking. They'll be there the second weekend. The big focus is going to be on Labor Day weekend, but we will have stuff going for all 12 days of the fair. But the majority of the stuff is going to be happening on Labor Day weekend.
And Dean is showing me a schedule that says that September 4th, I guess that's the Sunday of Labor Day, is Native Heritage Day. And
that is actually Alaska Native Heritage Day. So the biggest focus is on that day, mm-hmm. with a substantial focus throughout that entire weekend. And then there will be some activities going on throughout the entire fair.
Dean, when we first started, you were talking about how this is an attempt to reach out farther beyond the valley, beyond South Central, to be a truly state fair, and that there's more behind this than just bringing in a new kind of entertainment.
That's what we were charged for. We've talked about it for years, but the board directed us to go ahead and make that move this year. And really, this is just the first step. We felt that you know, that there was an opportunity to focus on Alaska Native culture at the fair, but that's not the extent of it. We want to find the performers, to find the folks that are talented and maybe we don't know about them. They're off and living in a cabin or somewhere, and we want to share them and bring them into the fair so that we really are representative of the state fair.
So this is sort of just the beginning.
I think so, yeah. That's the commitment that we have, and the direction that we had was that we become the state fair indeed rather than just in name.
Mm-hmm. And Susie, in terms of the fair visitor, should they be going on the website and planning out and saying, I want to see this particular performance or that, or is there kind of stuff going on most of the time that you could just sort of pick up as you go?
Some of both. Some of our bigger acts are definitely up on the website, but there will be still some surprises, some last-minute surprises. One thing that people are going to want to check out, regardless of what day they come to the fair, is right inside the Red Gate, when they walk in, looking over to the left, will be the Ravens People tent. It'll be the Donlin Gold Ravens People tent, thanks to our generous sponsor, Donlin Gold. And there's going to be stuff going on in there every day. Even when there's not scheduled dance performances or other performances, there's going to be some really cool displays, exhibits, demonstrations. A couple of those that come to mind are Finskimo, who's her name is Maya Lukin. She's an Inupiaq skin sewer and blogger, and she's pretty well known from the internet. Arxotica is a set of triplets from Bethel, who have gone into the organic skincare business, and they are doing a huge rip-roaring business. In fact, we're flying them up from the lower 48 because their stuff has gone nationwide. Hidesgear is a young man who does all Athabascan designs on contemporary wear. We've got some Kiviut weavers and knitters. And then for me, one of the big highlights is going to be Jack Dalton. And Jack Dalton is a Yupik storyteller. And go on his website, Raven Feathers.
Mm-hmm. Probably well known to some of our listeners. Yeah, he's terrific. Yeah,
he's going to be fantastic. And we get to have him as an artist in residence for most of the fair. He can't make it the first 2 days, but he'll be here from, Saturday the 27th through the run of the fair. And then on Labor Day weekend, focusing there once again, we have Raven's Radio Hour. That's featured three times, once a day on the 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th. At 6 p.m. on the 3rd and 4th, and 3 p.m. on the 5th. And Raven's Radio Hour is kind of a similar format to Prairie Home Companion, mm-hmm. but with more of the Native culture in mind.
Interesting.
And I haven't seen it, but from what I understand, you don't have to be Native to get all the jokes, but you'll
right.
laugh harder if you know the inside scoop.
Yeah, okay. And you mentioned Prairie Home Companion. You got that, too. You got the original.
Yeah, Prairie Home Companion itself, Garrison Keeler, with the Prairie Home Companion Summer Love Tour, is going to be our featured headline artist on the Borealis Theater stage on Sunday the 28th at 3 p.m.
I was just in preparing. I was looking at the lineup of performers in the, I guess it's the AT&T concert series, and it seems like it gets kind of bigger and more contemporary every year. There's still some of those bands that you might call, you know, they were popular once, and now it's great for people like me who are a little bit older to go and listen to, but then there's also ones that my teenagers would really like to go and hear. And I was just wondering how you pull all that together. It's kind of surprising to have some of these, you know, Colby Calais and some of these other really major contemporary acts coming to Alaska. We don't see that so often.
Yeah, well, again, you know, we are trying to hit every demographic. And, you know, of course, some of my favorites are probably going to be Garrison Keillor and Charlie Daniels and maybe Uncle Cracker.
Mm-hmm.
But my kids, in fact, my daughter was the one that kind of planted the seed on One Republic. And they're about they're one of the top sellers right now. And she really pushed for that. And
you've got your own focus group there at home, huh?
What's that?
I say you've got your own focus group at home to figure
out. Exactly, I do. But the thing is, when our kids tell us what's hot and we kind of check it out and verify that they're right, that's a demographic we really want to appeal to. So at least four of our shows are really targeted towards that younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
Chevelle
mm-hmm.
Stained, One Republic, Colby Calais.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got an equal number of shows that are really geared to their parents.
Right.
And the Rat Pack tribute might even be geared towards, in fact, that's on Seniors Day, and it's geared toward maybe a generation that's even older. So trying to make sure that there's, when no matter what your age group or what your focus, when you look at that fair schedule, something's going to pop out at you. At least one thing is going to, you're going to say, oh, I really want to see that show.
Now, I understand there's not very many tickets left for Garrison Keillor and the Prairie Home Companion. What about the others? Are they mostly selling out, or is there still time for people?
They're selling steadily and well. I think the only one that people should, you know, if it's time to panic on getting your tickets, Garrison Keillor is the one that it's time to jump on or lose out. Mm-hmm. He is almost sold out. One Republic is selling very well, and they will probably be a sellout by the time Fairtime rolls around.
Mm-hmm. Great. And does this?
And the other ones are selling steadily. There's still seats left.
It's so hard not to use the word sold out. We try not to say that because quite often the reserve seats will be all gone first. Mm-hmm. And if you use the word sold out, people immediately it becomes in the grapevine that the entire show is like that.
I see, sure.
So, but there are several that Craig Morgan and some of the ones that offer seats are very close to not having more seats available. Mm-hmm.
Are you somewhat limited by the size of the venue that you have there? How many does it seat where the performances are held?
There's different configurations. Some of the shows, you know, some of these younger generation shows, kids would rather stand than sit, so
right.
We pull the chairs, which affords more room in the venue. And I think our absolute maximum with chairs pulled and people standing in both sides of the venue, the reserved and the general, is pushing 4,500.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have seating, that, of course, spreads people out a little bit, and 3,500 is considered a maximum.
I would guess that's one of the smaller places some of these bands would play. I mean,
it is small. And, you know, sometimes people say, well, why don't you get Nickelback? Why don't you get, you know, and they'll name off some really huge, you know, get U2, get some of these really big bands. And it's like, well, yeah, we could, but then your tickets would cost you $200 a piece because we can only sell, you know, in the neighborhood of 4,000, give or take.
Right, right.
Tickets. So that's something that people need to understand when they write us and say, well, we'll bring up some of these, you know, big name bands. So we bring the biggest bands that we can afford to buy for a ticket that still is affordable for the public to buy.
That's great.
And you know, at some point you have to draw the line because you know that people are not going to spend $200 on a ticket to.
Right. Well, some fly outside for these shows, but I hear what
that's
you're saying.
True.
So
that's
is this
true.
A big moneymaker, the concerts and the other performances you have? Is that something that helps your nonprofit keep going?
It does add to our coffers to keep the fair afloat from year to year because, as I assume you know, even though we are the Alaska State Fair, we are in no way funded by the legislature on an ongoing basis. Our day-to-day expenses come strictly from our revenues, so we try to do things that enable us to then, in upcoming years, keep offering bigger and better things to the public that are free with fair admission.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some fabulous offerings in that regard this year.
Yeah, I think that's something that Susie knows more about this than anyone, but we've continually added more and more performers, acts, attractions that are free with fair admission. So when you pay your admission, because not everyone either can afford a concert or likes a particular concert, but they want to go to the fair with their family or their kids. And, you know, we've just added continually more and more things, everything from King's Stunt BMX show to Outback in Alaska and Birds Down Under, which is the traditional science museum exhibit area. The Caballero Horsemen were popular for a couple of years. This year we have the Pirates are coming. I keep telling my son the Pirates are coming. Mm-hmm. He said, you've already told me that, Dad. But
still, my kids just want to go to the petting zoo. So
yeah, I mean, and those traditional acts, the Lumberjack Show, mm-hmm. the petting zoo, those are all on the agenda. And they need to be things that people can do. 30 minutes is about the tops for mm-hmm. attention because you have so many things to do. I keep telling somebody you can't go do the fair in one day. I suppose you can, but you're going to miss an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, our number one attraction is food. Everybody loves food.
Yeah.
It's one of our goals to create a fair that has got so much going on that people can't do it all in one day, so that because we're really looking for those repeat customers. You know, people come one day and they could check several things off their to-do list, and then they realize there's so much more that they feel like they must come back another day in order to really see what all we have to offer.
That's great. Well, thanks very much, Susie. That's Susie Crosby, who works on the entertainment and events at the Alaska State Fair. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Now I'd like to go to another caller, and the little note I have here is sounds like it's an issue that's come up a lot over the years, which is about a feeling about inappropriate photos that are presented at one of the booths. And Diane, did you have a comment?
Yes, thank you for the show, Mr. Wolfert. I wanted to, every time I get to the fair, we're all so excited. A large group of us go every year. We bake for the fair. And once we get there and we're walking up the main aisle and over to the right, you cannot miss the inappropriate photos for the Right to Life, the anti-abortion group. And I see so many parents cringing and hiding their kids from it. And it's not the right culture for the fair. And I'm sure people have commented over the years, but I have been derelict and not commenting, and I appreciate this venue and opportunity to do so.
Dean Phipps, do you have any comment on that? Is there any kind of editorial thing?
I think I can shed a little bit. I might. It's been a few years, so the specifics. Years ago, back when Sarah Jansen was fair manager, the same kind of comments were made, and that we did not renew that booth. There was a lawsuit involved, Free Speech, Right to Life. I'm not sure the exact details, but there was basically the finding we were required to allow them to have a fair booth. And my understanding, in a general sort of way, I'm not a lawyer, was that we could make restrictions or take stands as they applied to everyone who was a vendor at the booth, but we couldn't single out specifically one booth over another and make a regulation that was specific to them. So the findings of that hearing and that long lawsuit established specific things that we can and cannot do. We not only have to allow them to be at the fair as a result of that lawsuit, but we also have to, we can't put them in the back, you know, out of the main thoroughfare to try to accomplish that in a different way. And we're still bound by that. Now, is there an answer that would go beyond that? Perhaps if we were able to come up with a regulation that would apply to everyone, and that's really difficult to do. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you still continue to see that, is we're bound by the findings on that lawsuit.
I appreciate the explanation. Thank you. But it doesn't pass the common sense test that a nonprofit would be, because this is not public property, correct?
That's correct.
So the free speech does not apply when it's not public property. This is not...
Well, that's not really true either, Diane, because, you know, there have been lawsuits about people being able to hand out leaflets in a shopping mall, and the courts have said, well, a shopping mall is sort of the public... That's where the public goes, and so that even the shopping mall owners can't sort of regulate who gets to hand out their leaflets. If anybody's going to be able to do it, everyone can. So I think that it'd be a good thing to have a First Amendment attorney talk about, and I think it's probably out of Dean and mine's.
Yeah, I brought it up because it does shed some light on it, but I can't specifically speak to the issues.
I sure understand your concern, Diane. I mean, the broader thing is clearly there's a lot of politics at the fair. There's a lot of anybody who wants to reach a large number of people wants a booth at the fair. And Dean, what's the policy of the board? Is it essentially that it's an open forum for people to express themselves, or how do you view that?
Well, Mike Heffron, who is a longtime respected manager of the Minnesota State Fair, one of the best in the country, used to say that a great fair is a mirror of the community from which they belong. There is a lot of tolerance in Alaska for different classes, different viewpoints. There's a lot of independence, and I think our fair reflects that. When it concerns safety, when it concerns someone that's interfering with a person's right to enjoy the fair, those are things that we try to create an environment that you can enjoy the fair and be safe. Mm-hmm. When you're bound by lawsuit, that changes it.
Yeah.
That puts it in a different venue.
Diane, I think it was an excellent question, and I hope I didn't cut you off. I want to give you the last word. Do you want to?
Thank you. As a parent, I want to say that I also shield my child from profanity. I don't let them listen to, and this is the equivalent, this is profane. And so It isn't a free speech issue when someone is using the F word and vulgarity in front of my child or exposing them to violence or sex. It's not free speech. This is the equivalent for me. And I understand the position that you're in, but as a consumer at the fair, I don't feel like this is settled. And right. I know that this is the case for the anonymous people who I see cringing and hiding their children, and also friends of mine. So it isn't a dead issue. And I just wanted to let you know that. I'm sorry. I'm glad the fair tried, and I'm sorry that it didn't work. It's completely offensive. Thank you so much for your time, though.
Sure. Thanks, Diane. It was a good call. We're going to take a break here in just a minute. I want to let everyone know that I'm talking to Dean Phipps, who's in charge of marketing and various other things at the Alaska State Fair. We're going to have another guest and talk about giant vegetables, one of my favorite topics, in the second half. And also talk about all other things having to do with the fair, any questions you might have. I'll give you those phone numbers to call in as soon as we come out of the break. So stay tuned on Hometown Alaska.
Listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
We're back. Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking about the Alaska State Fair. My guest today is Dean Phipps, who is in charge of marketing at the fair. And you can get involved in the show. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, just memories of the fair. The number here is 550-8433. That's if you're calling from inside Anchorage. 550-8433. From outside, it's 888-353-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. We have a good website. It's been recently redone, which is alaskapublic.org. And it's well worth a look. If you haven't checked it out yet, you should. So I have so many memories of the fair from when I was a child, and one of them in particular, I don't know if anybody else remembers this, but it made an indelible impact on me, which was that there was a cow that had been somehow surgically altered so you could see inside its body and watch it actually digesting its food. And it was like totally, you know, what an experience to see that. And sort of like, my God, that's incredible. And there's all kinds of things that, like, and I don't know where something like that would have come about. I guess my question is, how do things get into the fair? Is it just somebody in the community says, hey, I'd like to show something off, or how does that work?
Well, there are many, many exhibits. That some of them are competitions for ribbons. That's the traditional way. Others are ones that we seek out, like the petting zoo. The petting zoo originally was a traveling group of animals that came up from outside. After they came a couple of years, they said, we don't want to do that anymore. So one of our board members, Carol Kenley, and her family through the 4-H organized a petting zoo and developed it, trained the youth, and used it as a fundraiser for their organization. And that's, you know, those kind of things are some of the most successful mm-hmm. partnerships of the fair. The cow with the window was recently posted on a You Must Be from Palmer Facebook group, and it was at the experimental farm, the UAF experimental farm out there, and they were studying how milk producing and how that works in agriculture. You know, we've had muskox at the fair. We have a hatching fall weather friends that show the eggs developing, all the traditional things at the fair. And those are some of the most popular things that endure. People go back year after year to enjoy those things.
Mm-hmm. And now I'd like to go to Caroline, who has a comment or question. Caroline?
Yes, hi. I remember when I lived up in Fairbanks, it was the 4-H and FFA that had the livestock auction, but I think it's just the FFA now that's doing that. But I've encouraged families, you know, parents to go out there and purchase, you know, get with four other families perhaps and purchase a cow. And it comes wrapped, cut up. Everybody gets the same cuts. And that is the last Friday, if I'm remembering correctly, because the company I used to work for, we would purchase and donate to the food bank. But that was, you know, that is really a way to get good quality meat. You know what's in it because the kids have to keep a record of what they put in to the animal. And so, you know, it's a good way for the kids to get an opportunity to saw away some money for college.
But great tip, Caroline. Yeah.
I think it's really good. I think it just covers pigs and cows, but perhaps they've expanded it.
Okay. Well, thanks. That's a great tip. And now I would like to go to Becky, who's calling from Palmer. Becky?
Hi. My name is Becky, and I'm with Breeze Free Mat Too, and we are a local tobacco prevention and control coalition working in Palmer. And I just wanted to thank again the fair for going smoke-free this year. And to let people know that we'll be out there on Wellness Day, along with the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. And we'll be giving out, we've got 100 I'm a Designated Non-Smoking Area t-shirts. So not a huge supply, but we're going to do our part to help promote the fair's new smoke-free policy. And again, we just really, really want to say thank you for that policy. It's a really important, sends a really important signal to the community and to the state, we hope.
So what does smoke-free mean in the context of the fair? No smoking in the buildings? No smoking anywhere? Or?
There was some discussion go ahead.
I'll let Dean answer that, but my understanding is that they'll have there'll be no smoking in any of the buildings or near the gates or along the walkways. I think they're going to have 6 designated non-smoking areas off the beaten path and away from the line of traffic, and I think most importantly away from the areas where children tend to children and families tend to be. So, but Dean can answer that better than I can.
Dean?
No, I don't think I can. I think you summed it up pretty well. Actually, we've been smoke-free in a number of the buildings for years. A big milestone for me is when the sluice box, the bastion of smoke and alcohol and music, became smoke-free. And I saw that work and I said, well, it's just a matter of time before we actually advance to the next step. And mm-hmm. So I'm also very happy about that, particularly because food is our number one attraction at the fair. And there's no matter how you feel about smoking, it isn't necessarily a pleasant experience to sit down while you're eating and have someone smoking next to you.
Yeah, it's almost become the sort of the cultural norm is to be able to get away from it. Yeah. Well, thanks very much, Becky. Now I'd like to go to Stephen, who I think had another comment on our previous discussion about the photographs. Stephen?
Yeah, this is Stefan.
Sorry.
I'd just like to comment that I agree with the your last caller about the Right to Life booth, and I disagree with her. I agree that those pictures, they're heartbreaking. They're terrible. They're abhorrent. But the fact of the matter is that I know of a woman that went to the fair and saw those and changed her mind about having an abortion and decided not to. And now she's got a 19-year-old son, beautiful boy. So as much as I have a 5-year-old and I don't want my son to see that, you know, but in, at the end of the day, you know, if one child's life is saved by a woman seeing those pictures and rethinking her actions, you know, to me, that's a good thing.
Okay, Stephen, I appreciate your comment. I'm a little worried about getting our discussion derailed too much into the abortion issue because we're here to talk about the fair, but I really appreciate your comment. And go ahead.
I agree with you. There's one other thing I wanted to say is I wanted to ask you the question. That character from Palmer that's always out with the Obama sign that was arrested last year. Now, as I understand it, if he would have had a booth and paid for the space, then he would have been allowed to espouse his points of view. But because he, as I understood it, because he hadn't paid for a space, could you explain that a little bit more in context of the people paying for this a booth, like the Right to Life people, and them being free to have their opinion heard?
Well, you know, we have a number of people who, you know, represent different political entities or advocate for this and that on the fairgrounds. And there are regulations that they adhere to. We don't let them go out in the walkways and block the walkways. We don't allow them to travel all around the grounds passing out leaflets. When they sign up for a booth space and pay for a booth space, they are bound by those regulations. And so I think that was the main issue, not so much that they didn't pay the money, but he was operating outside of the regulations and interfering with the fairgoer experience, walking down the walkway with a sign across the walkway, interfering with programming that was going on at the plaza. All of those things were private property. Not a lot of folks know that. We think that we're funded by the state of Alaska. We're not. We're a 501c nonprofit and private property. So just as you might not want him interfering with a party going on at your home, that's our right. The way that we do that is to is we allow people that opportunity through getting a booth at the fair. Then we have regulations that apply to all of them equally.
All right. I'm going to move on, Stefan. Thanks for your call. All right.
There's one thing.
And I'd like to I had a call, another caller on the Right to Life issue, and I know she's been holding for quite a while, but Carol, I'm just going to have to let you go because I don't want to get just onto that abortion issue. I'd like to talk more about the fair. And Jason had a comment about the concert venue. Jason, did you want to chime in?
Yes, you bet. Thank you so much for the chance to speak with you. And just to first mention, too, that we as a family, we just love going to the fair every year, and you guys do a great job and making it a good experience, so thank you for that. I just am curious to know if there are any future plans and maybe trying to continue to make improvements on the main concert venue there. I think it's the Borealis Theater, and I know that it seems like in the past few years you guys have done some work to make that space a little more accommodating for crowds, but for us and attending the fair each year, it's actually, I'm wondering if there's any plans of building more of a sheltered space, like a shed kind of a venue, or things to make it better to experience those major concerts without having to deal with the elements so much.
We talk about it all the time. You know, there isn't a plan on the boards for creating a covered grandstand or something with a roll-on stage. Obviously, a recent incident in Indiana, we have high winds in Palmer, so that's something we have to look at with a temporary roll-on structure. I know that we would like to have a larger venue. We could bring even better groups here that people tell us they want to see and would pay for. Right now, I think the most people we've had was for Shinedown. I think we were bumping up against 5,000. When you start getting up into the upper echelon of groups, you can't afford to charge a ticket for how much they want, actually, sometimes twice as much as they would want to appear 200 miles down the road stateside.
Right, because they
lose the day coming up here.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
So we would like to do that. I think it's something that we're looking at, but you know, we're self-sustaining fair. We don't get state funds, so whatever we have to pencil it out.
And building a 5,000 seat theater is an expensive proposition.
Yeah, and as you know, when you try anything or build anything nowadays, it always grows. It always costs more. Mm-hmm. The demand for what you want it to be and what the service is going to mm-hmm. be, it just grows. But
Jason, is your main concern just inclement weather and the fact you've paid money for a concert and then you go and it's
kind
of uncomfortable?
Well, that's exactly it, and yeah. It's always a factor in that we're hesitant to go out and buy five or six tickets for family to see when you guys bring great entertainment, but it's kind of a big investment up front, and it's like, we don't want to deal with the elements, and so we're really reluctant to make that investment, and just knowing that if they had more of a more significant kind of sheltered space there, that it seems like would make a difference and might help to bolster crowds and audiences over time in doing that. And no doubt it's a major capital outlay, but it seems like a good project maybe for the borough into the future, and maybe the city of Palmer and the fair, and collectively trying to figure out how to make that happen.
Yeah, thanks. Good comment.
Thanks, Jason.
Well, it seems to me, Dean, that the fair is, the Matsu people feel it's their fair, but Anchorage people feel it's their fair as well, and it's the sort of thing that you'd even, I doubt there'd be much opposition to getting a legislative grant to build something up there. Have you guys thought about that?
We have, and there's discussions that go on all the time. Usually you get down to what's going to be built and who's it going to serve. But that's certainly the key. If you have something that serves the whole community beyond just the 12 days of the fair, mm-hmm. you have a much better chance of getting it funded mm-hmm. because it's going to have a broader area that it serves. More constituents are involved and feel it's important.
Are any of your facilities used not during fair time for other kinds of events?
Actually, that's probably one of the biggest changes since the time I've been mm-hmm. worked here. I mean, one of my favorite events is when we have 3,000 plus Girl Scouts camped out all over the grounds. Mm-hmm. We have two of the big dog shows, gun shows. We have mm-hmm. all kinds right. of events that go on year round. And, you know, some of those events, they contribute to our revenue. Others, you have to do them. The graduations, you can't charge as sure. much as they cost you. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, you're donating that effort to the community in some cases. I just wanted to tell you,
go right ahead.
The previous caller had talked about the junior livestock auction.
Oh, okay, sure.
And since she had invited people to participate in that is on Saturday, September 3rd in Farm Exhibits. And the 4-H is involved. It's the 4-H Junior Market Livestock Auction.
So that's your chance to buy these animals that the kids have raised all year long.
Right. Yeah. It's a fun event.
All right. I've got another guest I'd like to bring on the air. Kathy Liska is the crops superintendent at the Alaska State Fair. And I've been promising giant vegetables. And as we move into the last 15 minutes of the show, I thought I'd better deliver because it is a huge draw for the fair and something that makes our fair pretty unique. Kathy, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you.
So what is the what's the outlook this year? How's the weather doing? And do you get any kind of advance warning from the growers as to whether it'll be a record year or anything special that might be coming down the line?
Well, the weather, I think, is what we typically call fair weather. It's the rain. so we're used to that. We're looking at a pretty big and exciting year. This year, I am in contact with some of the growers. We have a potential couple of world records coming in. So that tells me that we could also have state records going on. Our pumpkins are pretty exciting this year. I'd like to say that we are looking at potential world record in pumpkins this year, which would be just fantastic to have. Our state record is 1,101 pounds right now, so a world record would be nice to have with that.
I'm just trying to picture an 1,100-pound pumpkin. It must be like the size of a Volkswagen.
You better have a forklift.
Yeah.
We do. They're huge. I mean, it's hard to... You have to see it yourself. So anything over 1,000 pounds is really just kind of awe-inspiring, a good mouth-dropper. Our crops department, with our world records, right now, the Alaska State Fair is holding 9 world records with Guinness. And
amazing.
To my knowledge, that is there's no other fair in the nation that can claim something like that.
Now, most people outside would just be absolutely amazed to hear that Alaska, we hold the record, 9 records for the largest vegetables. What's the story? Why is that something that we can do here that is beyond what's done other places?
A lot of people will talk that it's the soil, it's the daylight, it's our growers. We've got fantastic growers, is what it is. Most of the giants that come in, it's not a fluke that just happens in the garden when you're looking at the world records. These are special seeds that have been pollinated. It's genetically perfect seed to create these.
And an incredible level of care.
Absolutely. It's a full-time job for these growers during the summertime, particularly now with fair just being... A week away, all of their attention is placed in their crops right now.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't timing really important too, Kathy? I mean, in terms of having them peak at the certain at a certain time during the fair?
Oh, it is. Exactly. When they, you know, like anything that grows, you've got a maturity date to it. And so they, so it's when it's all planted. And they do grow these for this particular time of the year to hit this fair. They love doing this.
It must be, you know, it's part of the culture now that, that I think probably thanks to the fair and all the attention that is given to this particular competition, that has probably developed a little subculture of folks in the valley who are growing big vegetables, because it's got to be an awful lot of work. And so maybe that's a big key to our success, is that there's just a lot of people who are interested in it because of what you folks have done on shining a spotlight on it over the years.
I definitely agree with that. And not only in the valley, I mean, we have our big growers, or big hitters is what we call them around the crops department. We've got them from Nikiski all the way up to Fairbanks. So it's a great group of people, and they do. I think that they show a lot of incentive to people to want to do this. We get lots of questions about it throughout the fair time, about how to do it, you know, and who they contact. And we have, it's a special fair. It's a special crops department, without a doubt. It's world renowned.
And Kathy, I think one of the things that amazes me is that just when the growers get sort of complacent and think that, well, certain growers going to win every year, then somebody like Steve Hovasek comes along and breaks the world record that stood for 19 years, and then everybody starts going, "Now, okay, what is he doing? What do I have to learn?"
What did he break the record in?
Was it 2005?
Steve has the world record for the cabbage.
Right, for the cabbage.
And that's kind of the for some reason the cabbage is kind of the crown jewel. I mean,
it's
that's
the one that's gotten the most attention. Yeah. But I have to say that the squash, summer squash or pumpkins, sort of the drama of them arriving and how big are they going to be this year is about the same.
What's the most amazing thing you somebody bring in that just sort of blew your mind and you thought that couldn't possibly be that big, Kathy?
Well, the pumpkin. I don't think that any of us ever expected to see pumpkins the size that we're seeing them. The pumpkins that are being grown now are similar to the ones that are in all the other pumpkin contests around the nation and the world. It's Alaska. Nobody would expect a pumpkin to be that size. But actually thinking about it, I think one of the most amazing things that had come in, and again, we hold world record on that, is for the cantaloupe.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, which we... you know, 64.8 pounds. And so I think that was, I think for me myself, that was the most amazing thing. I didn't ever expect to see a melon like that.
Is it true that some of these great big varieties are really not that tasty compared to the sort of the regular garden variety, or are they just as good eating as the ones you might normally grow?
Some of them are okay to eat. When the root vegetables tend to get woody, so you don't want those. But again, back to the cantaloupe, or we've had 168-pound watermelon. They were wonderful, and lots to hand around to everybody.
I guess so.
As we cut them open, it's not something I don't think that, you know, people really think about eating those giants. So much, but some of them are still edible.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly for show, though. I do want to say that nothing in our crops department goes to waste, though. All of our entries that we do take in, we've got two partnerships that we work with. The Food Bank of Alaska comes in and goes through and picks out vegetables that are still worthy, and not just within Giants, you know, with our whole department. And then the rest of the vegetables, particularly the Giants, are now going to the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Center.
Oh, okay. So are there any rules about how you can grow the vegetables. I mean, you can you grow them in a greenhouse? Can you grow heat them? Can you do anything to get them huge? Are there any kind of rules like that it has to be grown outdoors or anything like that? I've never really heard that question answered.
In the Giants, there isn't a rule in place for that. They're grown both ways, both in the greenhouse and outdoors. In other divisions that we have within the crops department, there are rulings. We have outdoor-grown vegetables, and we have greenhouse-grown vegetables.
Mm-hmm. And one last question for you. Give me some tips for people who are coming to the fair and they want to see giant vegetables or see the drama of the weigh-in and see who the winner is and all that. How do they find out the best times to be there? And are there certain times during the fair that are best?
There are. Wednesday is our entry days. At that time you can see the vegetables coming in. With August 31st is our second entry. First entry, the fair isn't open yet, but everything will be on display on Thursday, August 25th, and will be awarded out at that time. The pumpkin contest is on Wednesday, August 31st. And that goes from noon until 3, so you can see the pumpkins being unloaded and weighed in right in front of the crops building. And then, of course, the giant cabbage contest is on Friday, which is September 2nd at 6 p.m. in the barn pavilion area. So really Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, if you want to see all the action as it's going on, are the best times to come in.
All right. And is there like an announcer there who tells you what's happening, or how do you actually go about presenting them when the contest is going on?
Well, during regular entries, it's just kind of a walk around and see.
Mm-hmm.
The cabbage contest, they do have announcers. It's in the big ring in the barn, so it's
okay.
Quite the show going on. And,
yeah.
And we're working on that with the pumpkins, too. We get a lot of people, a lot of crowd around there during the pumpkin weigh-off. And it's as far as announcing, I'm kind of just out there letting everybody know what's going on.
I guess if the thing's 1,000 pounds, it doesn't need too much of an announcement, right? You can see it yourself.
No, not at all.
Well, thanks so much, Kathy. That was thanks for being with us. Kathy Liska, the crop superintendent for the Alaska State Fair. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
We just have a short amount of time left, Dean, but there is an email here from Janice. I've always enjoyed shows at the fair until last year when I attended one at the remodeled Borealis. No chairs were allowed in general admission, and my old bones were too old to stand. Can't afford a higher price ticket. Oh, we've run out of time. I'm just going to read this. She's just suggesting that you allow chairs and revise the seating a little bit, and I'll send you that email so you can maybe get right back to
chairs. We did actually revise chairs on Uncle Cracker to help folks out on that.
Excellent. Well, this has been a really quick hour talking about the Alaska State Fair. I want to thank again my guest, Dean Phipps, and my earlier guests. And all the callers, and we had more people we could have talked to. If you'd like to continue the conversation, join KSKA on Facebook. You'll find the links on our new website at alaskapublic.org. Coming up next week on Hometown Alaska, join host Peter Dunlap-Scholl for a discussion on leaving Alaska and what population turnover means for our state. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web and audio designer. Thanks. I'm Charles Woolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.